All right, here we are with another episode of The High Ground, powered by Premier Companies. How's it going, Sal?
Doing wonderful, Ryan.
Great. Sounds good. Hey, we got a reoccurring guest, Aaron Bledsoe, back with us, and he's got a little bit of a planning report to talk about, and just a lot of things going on in the grain world and all that, plus maybe not a whole lot of anything, so movement-wise. So we'll get to that. But Aaron, before we get started, your question of the day is, if you'd have pulled out your phone right now and opened it up, what are your two most utilized apps as it's, that you use?
I'm pretty boring. I'd say email and my banking app.
Oh my God.
Wow.
Yeah. Now, I will say about September 20th on to about the end of January, it's going to be a hunting app of some sort.
What time daylight is and
legal shooting hours. Yeah. what the moon phase is, the barometric pressure. Oh yeah. Does it do anything? Did it help me this year? No, not a freaking bit. But
hey, you know what, though? As long as your hobby can cost you a lot of money and end up disappointing you in some way, that's a sign of a good hobby.
Yeah, do not. I mean, absolutely. And for all you husbands out there, do not tell your wife actually how much it costs for that pound of deer burger. Wow. She'll never be able to go hunting again.
The 37 pounds per what, or $37 per pound or something, or
yeah, you don't even want to think about it.
You'll lose a St. Elmo's argument next time, I'm guessing.
Yeah.
You won't have an excuse not to take her next time. So. Sal, what would yours be?
Well, it won't be the email app. I'd like to get rid of that app.
God. Yeah.
I think the Kindle app, I use it every day. Probably the Kindle app is the most often used one, and then the Amazon Audible app. So that, and I don't know how I would find any place without the Google Maps anymore. I mean, it has spoiled me. It gets me home from places. it's really kind of disturbing, all the shortcuts that I thought I had that are not at all the shortest route. So I don't know if I agree with the minutes, but it seems to know me pretty good.
It does. I don't really care for when you get in the truck and start it up, though, and it says how many minutes to. I'm like, you don't know where I'm going.
Yeah, you don't know me.
It does, but yeah, sure it does. But yeah, so I don't know. That does make me a little uncomfortable at times. But so I think my two would probably be the Audible app is on every day, no doubt about it. And then, man, I spend way too much time on Zillow. Just looking.
Zillow.
That's the property real estate app. It's just, I mean, that just, I love to just go to areas that I think, man, it'd be kind of cool to live there one of these days, and then just scroll through houses and property and ground. It's an unhealthy amount of time that I spend doing that. But I enjoy it. I just think it's funny. But
I go to Machinery Trader, machinerytrader.com, but
yeah.
My wife might listen to this episode, so I don't want to.
Well, car gurus and eBay, in between guitars and pickups. I had a problem with that as well.
Aaron would like this one. It's been quite a while ago, but had a home office, and I was down there, and it was like 12:30, 1 o'clock, and the computer's on, and Kim comes in, and she's like, "What are you doing?" I go, "I'm in a chat room," and she goes, "What?" And I was like, "A chat room? It was optictstalk.com." All they talk about is rifle scopes, and that was it. And I mean, binoculars, like maybe, but all of it was just like rifle scopes, any kind, every kind. And she's like, "You are ridiculous." I was like, "No, this is awesome. This is all these guys do. It's just rifle scopes."
Yeah.
So
I hide the Bass Boat Central app. I do like that one, but I sort of hide that one. I make sure I got a screen to flip to whenever I'm on that one, because that answers a hard no pretty well. There's no sense wasting time on looking at that one around my house, but I do enjoy it. I do. Boy, those shiny boats are fun to look at, but yeah, I get off that one pretty quick.
That's funny.
So, all right, Aaron, you just had a planning report in the recent past, not this week, but in the recent past. past, and I think we all understand where prices are. But we did get dealt a little bit of a surprise with how that report came out, some unanswered acres. And so let's just start with what the report said, and then what it did to the markets in the short term, and then what your advice is for all these bushels that we've got sitting out through the countryside.
Yeah, so to start, you know, in February we had the Ag Forum Outlook, or Ag Outlook Forum, however you want to pronounce it. Is, you know, they said corn acres were going to be around that 91.5, beans at 87.5 million acres, and everyone was kind of jockeying around there. Most people inside the trade felt like the bean acre was a little overstated, so the estimates were 91.8. roughly 92 million acres of corn, 86.5 million acres of beans. And everyone felt pretty comfortable. You know, I would have agreed with most of the trade estimates out there. That felt like a good area to be in. And the planting intentions report surprised us. Said 90 million acres of corn and 86.5 million acres of beans. So the bean wasn't big surprise, but the corn acre was. Then to drop it when most people thought it would hold there in the 91, 92 range, but to drop it 1.5 million from just the Outlook Forum number was pretty astonishing.
So what, what do you think attributed to that? And I mean, that left what, 6 million? I think I've heard you say 6 million acres of crop ground that
is just
sort of in the ether right at the moment.
Yeah. I mean, you know, it wasn't a straight one-for-one loss on the corn acres to bean acres. It wasn't. You know, and total principal crops is how they phrase it. You know, that's all ag crops. It was down 6.3 million acres versus 23. Now, that is a lot to just lose and just say we're just not going to plant 6.3 million acres that we did last year. But when you go back to 22... that's still up 2.5 million acres versus the 22 planted acres
overall
report.
Total,
so
total acres.
Overall. So, but I think one important thing to remember is this was a survey that went out in February, and February was not a good month for prices. You know, that's when January prices kind of hung around. We beans were losing some, but it wasn't a bloodbath. Corn was losing a bit, but it wasn't horrible either. February just demolished everything. You know, for the year so far, the lows were in that last couple of days of January, February timeframe. So with this being a survey base, most farmers just, they weren't real optimistic about corn. You know, and why would you be whenever you're in the midst of, you know, losing 20 cents, you know, every week, and it just being a slow death by a thousand cuts kind of on this thing, on this train of mind, or, you know, mindset. So I think the frame of mind had a lot to play into this survey. Now, this will get updated in June, and that will be based off of, you know, a lot of actual hard evidence there, you know, aerial photos, all sorts of stuff. But the acres number will be revised, and it can be, I shouldn't say will be, it can be revised in June. But going from here to June, these are the numbers we're going to go off of. It feels like the corn acre is probably a bottom line number. It feels like this may put a bottom to what that corn acreage could be. I think it eventually trends up.
So
that does not help the eventual, you know, ending stocks portion of it for this new crop.
So you think just the mindset from the survey, just the time frame and the mindset, could have really skewed the results then? And that kind of makes sense. I hadn't thought of that, just with the timing of the survey.
I think it could have. Beans versus corn right now, you know, corn just does not paint a pretty picture. So I'm not saying that it's not reality, but there are human emotions involved when you do surveys like this. I think the hard evidence of, you know, what the seed industry said got planted and what was invoiced and, you know, what do the maps say, that's going to give us a much better picture of what this really looks like. And I think one, you know, Indiana, I was kind of curious, you know, and you project some of what's going on in your backyard onto the national forefront. And around here, it felt like there was going to be, it felt like there could be some more bean acres, but it didn't feel like there was going to be a big shift. And sometimes it's hard to make that big shift. Just rotation wise, it's tough to do it. And so what we actually saw in Indiana from this report was, you know, corn's going to be around that 5.1 million acres, which is, you know, 350,000 acres less than 23. So beans were around that 5.75 million, which is up 250,000 acres. So again, like I said, it wasn't a one-to-one shift. You know, Indiana acres are down versus last year too, total. So it feels like there was definitely that shift.
Yeah.
A little bigger shift than what I think some thought they were going to be. It always felt like we were going to have more bean acres than we did last year. But to see corn come in below what they initially kind of thought was definitely surprising.
So it sounds like, though, and I could be wrong here, but it sounds like, though, if that sets the floor on the acres, then every report that comes out that's going to show more acres of corn, then the bump that we got last week, is that it? Outside of a supply or a weather issue? I mean, could every report from here that reflects more corn acres be more detrimental on the price?
Yeah, so I think it definitely doesn't paint a great picture. I mean, our picture didn't look great even before the report. Even at 90 million acres, it doesn't. We're still talking a lot of corn out there, and you can see that in the stocks report too. So that usually gets overshadowed by the planting intentions report because that's the big headline news. Everybody wants to know how many acres are going to be there. But there was a quarterly stocks report, and so when you look at that, you know, corn. This time versus last year, 13% more corn stored out in the countryside.
13% more.
13% more than 23. So what's scary about that I shouldn't say scary, but there's 24% more on farm corn than there was this time last year. So we're talking 24% more that we have to move through, and off farm storage was actually down 1% this time versus last year. So there's still a lot of corn out there on the farm that eventually is going to go somewhere. So when you take that into consideration with 90 million acres and trend line yields, it really creates a very burdensome stocks position. And so to get back to your question on what does it kind of do, you know, if we've got a baseline of 90 million acres now, and if the report's coming out in June and later in the year, keep bumping those acres up, or at least, you know, even if they hold, we're still talking what we would need to keep prices from falling or at least holding would be, you know, to get them to come up more would be a supply issue. So that's going to be a drought. And that is not a great way to market, in my opinion. You don't market with the hope of a bad situation occurring. And demand markets just take time to really kind of show themselves. Demand usually doesn't. It's not something that you'll see in one trading period. It like I said, it takes time. You'll see that over a year.
That was my next question, was how long for the markets to react to a demand change? And that's, is a year about as fast as it can pull it up with an increased demand?
Yeah, I mean, you'll see headline news of if there's all of a sudden just a brand new demand market open up, you'll see, you know, like years ago when the ethanol market came on, you know, when they started showing that kind of news of saying, hey, these plants are going to come online. This is what's going to happen. It's going to be, you know, there was an initial bump. But then at some point, what you need is you need follow through. So you'll have to actually see that demand come through into fruition. And that's where it takes time. You'll see that initial bump of there's news in the market that says, oh my gosh, we're going to have this. But then there's also that you're going to actually have to see that disappearance of bushels to prove that it's there and happening. So that's why demand markets take longer than a supply, because a supply, but if we get one weather event and it's gone, you know, there's no recovering from that. That's an immediate thing. Demand, it just takes time for markets to move through that.
It just seems like we never really, maybe we did. I mean, the, you know, with Ukraine and the Black Sea and exports out of that area, it just seems like it never really made the impact that we were afraid. I mean, on one hand, you know, like you said, you don't wish for a catastrophe anywhere, but on one hand, we were kind of afraid of an impact. And the other hand, now that we really didn't see much increase or a supply problem, it just didn't create the issues that I think we kind of predicted. I mean, or at least intuitively, we thought there was going to be more of a disruption.
Yeah, so I think a lot of those geopolitical and black swan events, like you said, Ukraine being invaded by Russia, and just a lot of other crazy things going on in this world, I think a lot of that held prices up longer than they probably would have been held. So, because if you look at our balance sheet and, you know, the fundamental side, corn and beans both were up at historic levels that we just don't spend much time at those levels for sustained periods of time. And we held them for quite a while. And if you look at what the, you know, if you look at what U.S. did, you know, we were producing good crops. You know, we didn't have any bad crops to suggest the prices that we had. So we were trading off of trying to figure out, you know, trade routes and the big political headline news. And we had good demand too. You know, beans were, that crush was phenomenal. Oil was up. So ethanol usage was, you know, pretty good. Plus we were coming out of the pandemic where everybody shut down and usage was pretty low. And you saw people start driving more. So there's a lot of things going into that kept us up there. But supply was not the was not the reason that we were up there. And so that kind of gets back to supply stories or supply bull markets. That's a quick thing. Demand usually will hold a market for a while, but it takes a while to get there. So there's some of that. Plus, you know, South America, they had a couple crops that weren't phenomenal several years in a row. And then you had the political unrest and the Baltics and, you know, there's just a lot of things feeding into this of where we have been. And now we're starting to get on the backside of it where things have, I don't want to say calmed down, but trade routes have figured themselves out. And South America has now came back, got back to where they're kind of used to being in production. And we're seeing that in the markets now.
Okay.
So you got a lot of corn on the farm, and we're basically in planting season. And so farmers are going to be pretty busy. We got bins full out there. Next report comes in June, which is sort of a wrap up and a follow up to when they can confirm our planted acres. What's your recommendation to farmers out there who have a lot of bushels to haul, maybe not even priced? So what are you telling them, or are they even asking at this point?
So they are asking, there's been a lot of questions, you know, for the past month. Well, what do we do? And, you know, I this report gave us a holding spot for corn. So this wasn't like bad news. This planted acre report was good in the sense that it threw out a lower corn acre than what they projected. So this is not bad. It's just that there's a likelihood that that this put a stopper for the moment. And so going forward with this being kind of a stopper, what I would suggest is, you know, really kind of pay attention to this April, May, June timeframe historically speaking, for old crop and new crop, these are good windows of time to where you can possibly get some overreaction to the top side. You know, maybe Iowa is dry for 7 days, or maybe they're wet for 7 days when they're planting, and that leads to maybe another, you know, 10, 15 cent run up on the board. So I think our sites probably need to be readjusted from where we've been the last several years, where on an average day the last couple of years, 15 cents is nothing in the corn market. You know, you could do 20, 30 cents on beans. And while it was extremely emotional, those swings weren't that unheard of. That was kind of the norm. Now we're talking swings of 5 to 10 cents on corn. So if we see a 15 to 20 cent rally on corn, my opinion would be you need to reward the market, take advantage of it. It's giving you something that it's giving you an opportunity. So try to lock in that opportunity. There's a lot of it, you know, when you start getting into carry markets, there's a lot of advice about trying to capture the spread and make the market pay you more for later. And you know, and at the farm level, if you're not hedging, about the only way that you can do that is to forward contract. So that's going to be big right now. Is I understand everyone's going to be busy planning and getting this thing going for new crop, but old crop wise, if you see a posted bid in May that you like better than right now here in April, my suggestion would be lock it in now and then just deliver it in May. Especially if you feel undersold. If you feel overwhelmed, undersold, don't hesitate to get a hold of us. We'll try to help you out. Even if it's not coming here, we'll try to help you out on at least alleviating some of that, so you're not by yourself trying to just sit in your own head and figure this stuff out. Because there are still opportunities out there. It just, it feels bad because we're talking $4 corn instead of $6 corn. So emotionally, it's just hard, but there's still opportunity out there.
And setting targets that aren't $5, they're, you know, $4.25 or something. You're right. I mean, not
yeah,
more realistic. Like you said, it may move 5-10 cents, and not the 20. So just be more realistic targets, I guess, for the market we're in.
Yes. Yeah. Just readjust your sights. I think now, you know, before, like I said, we could see big runs in a week. I mean, we saw that last, at the end of July, where we saw, oh my gosh, it was like 60, 70 cents on corn in like five trading periods. I mean, and beans were over a dollar in a week, and we lost it even faster. But there were those opportunities. When we're talking about, you know, supply and demand numbers that we have right this second, or what we potentially have, those swings just aren't that big. So we just have to readjust those sites. That's all it is. There's still opportunity out there. It's not all doom and gloom. We've been given an opportunity here at a very good window of time, historically speaking, to get some stuff caught up on sales and, you know, try to get some bushels moving.
Okay.
Anything else, Aaron, that's top of mind for you currently?
No, I mean, I think just getting those targets out there, readjusting those sites. In these types of markets, you typically start to see more fancy contracts being thrown around. You know, in an inverted market like we had the last couple of years, where the nearby price is the best, you don't hear too much about those. Just selling when you feel like selling was usually, you know, usually paid you pretty good. Now in these types of markets, It pays someone to have a plan, a disciplined plan, and having clear objectives as to what you're trying to get done. It pays you big dividends to do that in these types of markets. I know you always feel like you're losing out on opportunity when you lock something in and it goes a couple cents higher, but you also protected a lot of risk of it going down another 10 cents too. So with those fancy contracts, you know, my opinion is don't overcomplicate this. Now's the time to just have a clear objective. And trying to do things a little fancier or doubling up bushels and trying to get creative you create a lot more emotional situations for you with that stuff. So I think it definitely behooves people to have a disciplined plan in this type of market. And like I said, April, May, June, good times to get stuff done for old crop and new crop. There could be any kind of weather scare, good or bad, whether it delayed planting or we're too dry and we're getting way ahead of ourselves. Oh my gosh, it's going to be a drought again. That type of news is capable of coming out in this time period. So that's why we run those average contracts. We're going to run them up at Columbus and at Worthington and Lagodi. So by all means, get a hold of us, talk to us about those. It's a great tool to get a portion of new crop and January delivered stuff locked in, but leave your pricing window, kind of spread that pricing window out a little bit to try to take advantage of those historical periods.
All right. Okay. Good advice. Well, Aaron, thanks. And we know you're busy. It's always busy, it seems like. So we will let you get back to it and look forward to having you back on when you have another market mover. If that's at some time in the near future, and obviously we'll continue to know how this planting season goes, although we're cold and wet right now, we figure it'll change pretty quickly. So thanks for being a part of it. And that's another episode of The High Ground, powered by Premier Companies. Thanks, Aaron.